Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your teleconference on Obama administration's housing plan conference call. All lines are in place on a listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for your questions and comments following the presentation. If you should require assistance throughout the conference, please press star zero. At this time, it is my pleasure to turn the floor over to your host, John Muir. Sir, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Art, and thank you, everyone, for getting on in this very, very busy afternoon. We have Andrew Jakubowicz here, who is the Associate Director for the Economic Mobility Program here at the Center for American Progress. He's going to talk through some of the details of the plan, what it means short-term, long-term, and then he'll also very fairly quickly open it up for any questions that you may have. I wanted to just quickly, before we begin, give some contact information for the press office here at the Center for American Progress in case there are follow-up questions, not just today, but throughout the rest of the week. So if you have any follow-ups and you want to get in contact with Andrew or any of our other experts here, you can email me at jneurohr@americanprogress.org. You can also call 202-481-8182. So without further ado, I'm going to turn things over to Andrew, and then after Andrew's done talking, we'll open it up for question and answer. Andrew?
Thanks, John. I'm going to try and just run through this relatively briefly. Obviously, it's got a lot of pieces and gets into some complexity, but I really want to be out here to make myself available to you guys to kind of be able to explain some of the various components to the extent that they're not already clear to you. So I'm just going to run through it relatively quickly and then open it up for questions, and hopefully as we talk through the questions, things will become a little more clear. The areas at which things are still opaque, we can kind of dig through together. So basically, our general take on this plan is that it is light years ahead of anything that we saw coming out of the Bush administration. I mean, it's really the first program that we've seen to address foreclosures in a systematic way, and to address the foreclosures not only in the context of neighborhoods, which the president had sort of mentioned towards the end of his speech this afternoon, but really address the fact that there are plenty of people out there who got into lots of different problems for lots of different reasons. And so this isn't sort of a one size fits all. There's actually several components to it. And I think that the overall sufficiently comprehensive and covers enough of the mortgage market that the effects of this plan being put into place are likely to stem a lot of the declines we're seeing and a lot of the foreclosures, hopefully. And so with that in mind, there are basically three parts to the program. One is leveraging the GSEs, which is, again, sort of a light years ahead of what we saw coming out of the Bush administration, where basically sort of just same way with TARP, where they basically said, hey, we'll give money to the banks and, you know, hope they do something good with it. They basically did the same thing with the conservatorship of Fannie and Freddie, where they basically said, okay, we're taking you guys over, but, you know, just keep doing whatever you've been doing, basically. They didn't really issue them guidance as to how they should be lending, and they certainly didn't use the tools that they had as conservators through Fannie and Freddie, the existing capacity that exists there, to issue new mortgages and to help folks refinance. And so what we're seeing now is basically strong guidance and basically an outright statement saying, hey, we're going to use the GSEs to protect ourselves from future losses. Taxpayers are effectively on the hook anyway. If Fannie and Freddie MBS fail, the bond payments that they owe to investors are basically at this point almost explicitly guaranteed by the government. And so the idea is if we can minimize the losses in those MBS by restructuring them, it's far less expensive than proceeding to foreclosure and then trying to recoup that money so that way the payments are made more whole. And so that idea of foreclosure being more expensive than modification is pretty much the guidelines that apply both to the private sector servicers making modifications as well as to the refinancing that's going to take place under Fannie and Freddie. And so Fannie and Freddie now are able to refinance up to 105% of loan to value. So up until now, Fannie and Freddie conforming loan limits and guidance basically said that if you owed more than 80% of the value of the property, then you wouldn't be able to get a conforming loan. And this basically says we will refinance you if you already have a Fannie and Freddie loan, even if the balance on the loan exceeds 100% or up to 105% of the value of your property. So this allows people who are otherwise creditworthy but have suffered losses basically because the housing market in the neighborhood has declined, which is pretty much most places in the country, So these borrowers then basically be able to refinance into a Fannie and Freddie conforming a fixed rate mortgage. So it doesn't obviously help the folks who have been in very high cost markets that were not eligible for Fannie and Freddie. So places that had high numbers of jumbo loans would not necessarily gain assistance, as well as people who have been in markets that have been particularly hard hit, where if you bought at the peak of the market and you're basically out 20, 30, 40% on the value of the property, even if you have a Fannie or Freddie loan, you wouldn't be able to refinance with them at this point, at least not through that. You may be able to gain assistance through some of the loan modification components available through the private sector servicers, which is really the second part of the program. And the idea there is that lenders will write down, or servicers will write down, the monthly payment on the mortgages to 31% of income. So your debt-to-income ratio at the end of the day will be 31%. And the way that that happens is sort of a two-step process. So the first step is the servicers will adjust the interest rate down to 38%. And that's done without any sort of risk sharing by the government or anything like that. That's purely a loss in the future stream of mortgages. But to get from 38% down to 31%, what the government will do is basically match dollar for dollar, so that at the end of the day, the servicers are effectively writing down 3.5% and the government is taking another 3.5% on the debt to income analysis. And so what that does is the borrower's ultimate payment is 31% of income goes towards the mortgage, and then the government tax on another 3.5%. So the loss to the investors at the end of the day is slightly smaller. And again, the idea being that a 31% debt to income ratio is a sustainable ratio, which is important because the idea is not simply to provide people with, you know, a modification that sort of is loosely defined, but really create a sustainable modification so that we can keep people in their homes and keeping people able to avoid foreclosure, with the idea being that foreclosures are incredibly costly, not only to the families that lose their homes, but drive down local property values. And the idea here is to help stabilize local values and help hopefully get local housing markets to start up again as people are less concerned that prices are going to decline precipitously. And so within that, to get servicers to participate, there is a $1,000 sort of upfront incentive. And actually, if you're still current on your loan and servicers kind of come out and find you, they even get paid $1,500 if it's the bank, or $500 if it's a servicer, to reach out to people who are at risk of foreclosure but not yet delinquent on their loans. So they get $1,000 to make a modification. And then as long as that modification is sustained, so the borrower remains current, they get $1,000 a year for up to 3 years. I'll come back to that in a minute because I think that those payments potentially are excessive for a variety of reasons, which I'll address. But the other component, which is interesting, is they also offer $1,000 a year towards the borrower's outstanding principal balance over 5 years. So for every year that you're current, you get $1,000 taken off the balance of your mortgage. The ultimate result of that is that the mortgage gets paid down faster and a greater percentage of your monthly payment goes towards principal rather than interest. So families are able to gain equity in their properties faster than they would without that principal assistance. But the other piece is that, to the extent that we're concerned that borrowers may take a modification, realize that they're underwater, they might choose still to walk away. This negates some of that incentive to walk away, because the longer they're current, the more and faster they're building up equity in their homes. And so the desire to walk away potentially from a weaker housing market is mitigated somewhat. Now, getting back just to the servicer incentive for a moment, I think it's important to recognize that at the end of the day, servicers have a fiduciary duty to their investors, which means they have to make modifications they have to act in the best interest of the investors. And the truth is, in almost all instances, modification will be more valuable over the long term than proceeding to foreclosure. If you think about just what it means to foreclose in this current environment, taking possession of a property that will be very difficult to sell on the back end will largely incur significant holding costs in terms of maintenance obligations, property taxes, and the like. And then the obvious challenge of selling into a weak housing market means you're going to get relatively little back for what might be a large outstanding principal balance that you're on the hook for. So by avoiding foreclosure, you're actually being doing something that's in the far better in the interest of the investors. And so the idea that servicers need an incentive to make modifications, I think, is somewhat overstated. I think it's reasonable to expect some degree of payment to the servicers for making modifications. I mean, there is time and effort involved. There are costs that they incur. But sort of $4,000 over 3 years seems like it's unnecessarily high. The interesting thing is that servicers who are part of banks that are TARP recipients moving forward will be obligated to participate in this program as a condition of receiving additional government funding. And I think that's one of the biggest sticks to encourage or basically mandate participation in these modifications. The other piece is that these modifications will effectively become standard industry practice. And that type of guidance in terms of standard industry practice goes a long way to protecting servicers from lawsuit. If they're doing basically what the industry demands of them or what is best practice in the industry, then that's largely enough to protect them against investor lawsuits for making modifications. There's already existing guidance out there saying to investors, saying to servicers that you should modify with the best interest of the pool as a whole, not any particular investor. But even with that guidance out there, they've not yet really been making widespread modifications. I think that the combination of explicit guidance that's being offered across the board by various regulators in conjunction with the fact that the GSEs are going to be modifying and all of the TARP recipients moving forward are going to be modifying based on these rules basically means that this is the way the industry handles these types of situations. So I think that the fear of investor lawsuit may be somewhat overstated. The last piece of the program doesn't actually deal with at-risk borrowers or underwater borrowers per se, but simply make sure that mortgage credit in general is available at a reasonable price in the broader marketplace. And to do that, Treasury is basically going to be expanding the credit line offered to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac from $100 billion to $200 billion to buy up additional mortgages and then repackage them into mortgage-backed securities, as well as the Treasury stepping in and actually buying up Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac securities, which will then, again, kind of restart that market. With that market moving again, interest rates will be able to be maintained at a relatively low rate, which will help people who are still creditworthy and still have sufficient equity in their homes to refinance into a fixed-rate loan at a very attractive rate. And so that combination of those three things really does a lot towards stabilizing, I think, or potentially stabilizing the housing markets. So it's both comprehensive in its scope as well as, I think, does a reasonable job of protecting the various parties from either unnecessary losses or unwarranted windfalls. And so with that, I will have John open up the floor for questions from you guys.
Yeah, Art, I think we're ready for question and answer.
Thank you, sir. The floor is now open for questions. If you do have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. Questions will be taken in the order they were received. If you are using a speakerphone, we ask that while posing your question, you pick up your handset to provide favorable sound quality. If at any time your question has been answered, you can remove yourself from the queue by pressing pound. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. And please hold while we pull for questions. Okay, sir. Your first question comes from Jessica Wehrman, Dayton Daily News.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Good. I have a two-part question. I guess
sure.
The first is, how much of this has to be approved by Congress and how much can be sort of addressed through a rule change?
Sure.
And then my second question is, how is I'm curious about the Hope for Homeowners program last year, because it seems like it's kind of been a bit of a failure. And how is it different from the refinancing options in this proposal?
Sure. So the first question is, in terms of Congress versus sort of just regulatory changes. And the truth is, with the exception of the bankruptcy fix, which would basically allow judges to modify the terms of a primary mortgage in bankruptcy, which is something that they're currently not able to do, everything else is within the realm of authority that already exists in a variety of places within the government. So the Treasury activities are taking place under TARP are basically already, you know, sort of in what's in that legislation to allow them to do these kinds of things. The regulatory changes to allow Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to acquire or refinance mortgages up to 105% of loan to value is simply a regulatory change that would work through the Federal Housing Finance Agency, which is their overseer. So basically, the pieces that are out there now are, and then also some of the insurance components that would exist for some of the modifications, would basically run through the FDIC. So those are already existing authorities that the various regulators and entities have. And so with the exception of the bankruptcy component, that would really be the only piece that would need congressional approval for. In terms of hope for homeowners, the general argument is that the servicers and the investors at that point in time were not really ready to take the steep losses required. Hope for homeowners required initially basically a write down to 87% of the current value of the property. So you're talking about a loss of principal balance, which basically means that the investors have to take all of the downside now and basically lose the upside if the market comes back. It ultimately was a windfall potentially to the homeowner, but something that was ultimately going to be split between the homeowners and the taxpayers. What this program does that's different is it stays away, for the most part, from changing the amount of principal. So at the end of the day, the bank or the lender or the investor will get, once that property sells, assuming it sells for, you know, more than the balance of the current mortgage, they'll be made whole. They may have to take a loss over time in terms